Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 126 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Now, before we get started to our maybe announcements, we have someone with us, I think, next to me. Summer, who might this be?
You think? I mean, I can see her, which means you can see her. She's not imaginary.
She's not invisible today.
She's not.
Maybe I am.
But you're not.
So who is this?
One of my besties from Atlanta, Georgia, Ms. Abby Parker.
Hello.
Now, is Abby, has Abby joined us before?
Abby has.
She has, like once, twice, three times a lady, or?
At least once.
At least once.
For sure once.
I think just once.
Just once. The last
and
time
then I realized how stoned
Let's be clear.
I sound online.
So do we have any announcements?
No.
What about a Brianna?
No.
Okay, then. That's settled.
Exactly. Let's move on to our read-along of chapter 37, entitled Holyrood.
This is another long chapter, but nothing like 36.
It was not as long
as Preston Glands.
It was actually Preston Pens.
Except our episode was Preston Glands.
And
you're and you're welcome. So, in chapter 37... we are in Edinburgh, so it's October 1745, so post Preston Pans. The prince has led his army back to Edinburgh, quote, to bask in adulation, unquote. While he was basking, Diana writes, quote, his generals and chieftains labored. So he's not having a good time, but he's being hoity-toity with whom he needs to be hoity-toity with. And
well, let's be honest, they're feeling like cock of the walk after that spectacular win at Preston Pans. They think
they
that they're
do,
like,
but
they,
the point Diana
feel real good
but
about
the,
it.
Well, ish. The point Diana is making is not that they're not happy that they won, but that they get back and he was basking in this win, as you're saying, but his generals and chieftains, and of course everybody lower than that, all the, you know, regular laborers, regular army fighters, whatever, farmers who came from their land to support the cause, were laboring. Men were getting any equipment they could for the coming battles. Charles was talking of going to Stirling and Carlisle and then maybe going south even to London. And Claire was readying for battle too, as a medical practitioner though. So
well,
she was getting her
let's be honest, though,
stuff
his,
together.
Charles's role in this war is not as active as the people on the ground, like, fighting it. So, of course, he's like, yay, look, my people won. This is awesome. And everyone else is like, okay, that sucked. We have more to go. And it's not going to be as easy as that, I'm sure. So they're all trying to, like, rally their forces and get everything they need to go. And Charles is just basking in it, like, this was so great. I did nothing, and it was awesome, and I won. And it's going to happen every time now.
Well, he's a figurehead. He's a cause.
Yeah.
You know, his job is to stand there and look pretty. If he dies, then there's no point to the battle.
Well, he was later on called Bonnie. So, yeah, you're right. He was meant to look pretty. So as the men are doing their thing, Claire's doing her thing. And among her stuff that she was preparing was she was collecting herbs, stuff for sutures, and all the alcohol she could get, etc. A young boy, on orders of the prince, had come to fetch Claire. His demeanor reflected her reputation. Apparently, la dame blanche travels. Quote, he seemed slightly disappointed at my depressingly normal appearance. Unquote. So he had come knowing whom he was supposed to come and talk to, with probably a little bit of fear, but with trepidation. And then when he sees her, he's like, what, you're the dame blanche? You're the witch. And this young boy tells her she's to bring her box of medicines to a meeting. And so, as I said, he was on the orders of the prince to come fetch her. She knows that La Dame Blanche makes the prince unsettled. He'd crossed himself surreptitiously and made the two-fingered horns sign against evil when she had been around him before. And she was pretty sure the prince wasn't calling her for medical treatment for himself. It turns out the prince is in fine health. He was excited and a bit agitated. And I always find it entertaining and funny in this section when Diana's discussing the prince and how he's agitated and how when he's not calm or got himself under control, his English goes to pot. I love it because it's such a human thing. And even though English is my first language, my English can go to pot. Well, that's the big question.
Come on.
My language can go to pot. Now, Summer, does your English ever go to pot? Or Abby, when you're drinking or something else?
I mean, that's different. I mean, being inebriated and having my tongue not work the way it normally does is totally different than like having...
Being excited.
Yeah, and having two different languages at my disposal.
It is. And I'm going to get to that, but I want to start with your mother tongue.
Mother tongue.
Leave my mom out of this.
It's called a mother tongue. Your first language, English, we presume. So do you ever get like tongue-tied in English?
I mean...
Can you draw that out anymore?
I could. You want me to try?
I get tongue-tied.
I do get tongue-tied, but there's usually extenuating circumstances.
A dude? A Scottish dude?
I get tongue-tied with dudes.
You were there... present at every interaction of me and any Scottish dude.
When I'm around a cute boy, I tend to forget how to speak or walk or joke.
I haven't heard about walk. Oh, do you like run into things?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Oh, that's funny. That's
I'm
amazing.
I'm straight out of a Drew Barrymore 90s film.
So you are pure grace.
I'm pure grace and demeanor.
Really?
Yeah. Can we just go back for a second, though?
Sure, absolutely.
Before Claire realizes that it wasn't Charles that she was calling on medically, I like that she immediately jumps to gonorrhea.
Of course she did.
That she was like,
I forgot about that.
The prince needs my assistance. It must be an STD. Clearly.
Hold on. Be politically correct. They're called STIs now.
What?
Yes.
Since when?
Because it's an infection instead of a disease.
Exactly.
Why are we offended about that?
I don't know if they're offended. It's just the term now.
2015 was the year that everyone got offended about
everything. Wait, what was... Okay, but STD was like the stepping stone from what? Wasn't there one before that?
VD.
VD.
Remember that song? The VD polka?
I do remember that song.
We got to have to break that up one day.
We don't, actually.
Oh, there was a song called the VD polka?
It's from a musical, but we should never break the VD out ever. Keep it to yourself. If you have it, keep it to yourself.
My friend wrote a lovely little musical number about crabs.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
I'm sure.
We're going to say that for your next visit.
we're gonna make your friend stay home. She's not allowed to come here with her crab.
So we talked a little bit about English. And yes, you're right, Summer. What I asked you is completely different or was completely different when compared with the prince who had at least two. He had more than two languages, but he had French, Italian. And Italian was his mother tongue, and then French, and of course English at least.
I have a comparison. So I don't speak fully another language, but I've definitely attempted to when I am in other countries if I know enough. And I know if I get frustrated, I immediately revert back to English because there's no chance that while I'm frustrated that I'm going to, like, come up with the right words. Or another example being, I try very hard to keep my mouth clean as far as cuss words goes. But when I'm angry or when I'm frustrated, that all goes out the window.
Or excited, maybe.
Or excited.
If anything, yeah. Then, like, even keel.
I mean, I used to use the F-bomb as paprika. So, I mean, it was a flavoring word.
I love the F-word.
As paprika.
It's an adjective, a noun, a verb, all of those things all at the same time. And I can use it four times in one sentence if I need to.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's pretty
great. I won't because you don't like it when I do it. But I do really appreciate that word.
Well,
it's pretty amazing.
It was a favorite of mine. But when you work at a church, they frown upon it.
So
that's a different F word.
Oh, yes,
frown.
It is. So if we look at the different languages, so Summer, you speak some German. You definitely understand it, but you speak some German.
Jurglish, yes.
Jurglish. And Abby understands.
Jurglish.
Some German and speaks Jurglish or Danglish from the German side. So have you, so maybe that setup actually won't work with my question, but do you think if you were speaking the German that you do speak?
Poorly, yes.
And you got into like a little bit of an excited situation like the prince or you're really excited or really scared or really whatever, agitated, that your language, your second language would go to pot?
Oh, hell yeah. Well, the problem is you get into that point, that heated moment where everything is moving so much faster. And when it's not your main language, you don't have all of those words at the ready. It's like if you had a keyboard that played 8 octaves and what you needed to express was in the 10th or 11th octave and you just don't have the notes to be able to supply that, all you can do is rely back on the 8 octaves you have. So I feel that I could totally relate to that. I know for a fact that's happened to me when I was in Germany and an exchange student, and literally I was literally the worst German speaker ever.
It was probably not ever.
I got better.
You're, of course.
I got better, but I started off pretty bad.
So the only thing, and I know for 100%, whether it's French or German, oh my gosh, my second language, or sorry, any non-native language for me also goes down the drain when I'm like excited or agitated or whatever. But the funniest thing ever, and I still cannot explain it, at your bachelorette party, when we all got in the limo and we all got...
And you refused to speak English?
Once I got past a certain...
I forgot about that.
No, that's right. Abby was there too. Once we got past, or me at least, got past a certain level of inebriation, I started speaking.
Nobody else was that drunk.
Oh, really?
You were the only drunk.
Oh, my gosh. Cause that's because, like, I never drink. Once I got past a certain level of inebriation, I just started speaking German. And I refused.
Remember.
I know. Abby
she literally refused to speak English.
I don't know what that was about. It's never happened before. It's never happened since.
It's for the best. It was pretty silly.
That was a funny night.
Oh, it was funny. I picked you up off the floor a couple times.
Didn't one of you guys fall in like a pharmacy?
She did. Me. She slipped on the veil you made me and ended up on the ground.
How did she slip on the veil?
Because I had it in my hand. And
she was dragging it.
And she stepped on it and fell on the ground. And then just sat there. She just sat there on the ground and laughed.
And so we're like, no, looked at me. Wait, where's Ginger? Oh,
she was just gone.
So back to the chapter. The prince cuts to the chase. There's a Highland chief who is considering joining the cause, his cause, but he's unsure. And this chief insists on speaking with Claire before he decides. Now, Claire realizes that the prince's agitation is actually a mix of befuddlement and suppressed fury. Those are Diana's words, I'm pretty sure. What gall the man has. How dare he wait on someone to talk to a witch? So here he is in charge, all right, large and in charge, and he is dependent, even though he's in charge, he's dependent upon these people basically signing up for him. He can't force them to. He wants them to commit their people to be troops. So here's this Highland chief who is on the fence, and he's like, okay, I may or I may not, but before I make up my mind, I need to talk to this woman over here. And the prince is like, what? It's a woman, you know, and not just a woman, it's a witch. Why should my potential future depend in any way on this woman who's the wife of a witch and the wife of someone who's already committed to me? He's being a royal icky day.
He's just being a royal. Let's just stop there.
That's so. I like that. I can go with that. So Claire's at a loss for who it could be. The prince requests that she convince him, this other dude she's going to go see. Claire thinks that this is another point that she may influence the future. So she's thinking, okay, you know, we don't really have a lot of choice. Jamie and I have committed ourselves this far. We've gotten through Preston Pans. This is another point that if I decide to help try and convince someone, would that work to his success potentially in changing the future? Or does it matter what I do?
Or had she always done that? Because I believe
seriously,
she was part of all of that from the beginning.
It's a loop, I'm telling you. So every man, potentially troop, was important. Until that point, they'd taken Edinburgh, beaten the English at Preston, and were going out and a boot.
They were not Canadian.
No, that's true. Since they'd been unable to stop Charles, the best they could do was to help ensure he was successful. She had to see this person first. She decided that she would try her best to convince someone. She recognizes, as they enter the room, she recognizes Angus Vore right away. Then she is led to the sofa where an aging Colum McKenzie lies. I love the description of his dove gray eyes. Claire and Colum had not expected to see each other again. He has Angus get some brandy for Claire, because he's already imbibing, apparently. Colum's hair was now streaked with gray. The lines in his face were deeper, his skin slacker over his bones. His shoulders were hunched. As he calls her niece, the prince's mouth drops open like, there's no way. How does this happen? So it's been 2 years since they'd seen each other, he says. And that kind of shocked me. I thought, wait, what? It has not been 2 years. And then I thought, so she goes back Beltane, which is May 1st, right? They're wed within 6 weeks or so. So they're wed, she and Jamie, in June of 1743. She was almost burned as a witch a few months later. And they were at the Stoned when he was trying to give her an opportunity to go back at her birthday, which was just before All Hallows Eve, so October 29th, I believe it is, because it was a near a,
right.
a fire festival.
And then they spent some time with Lallybroch before.
Exactly. And so then that's all fall of 1743. And she almost went back, but decided to stay with Jamie. So I guess it then was 2 years, because then remember with the whole talk, the whole question I asked Diana Gabaldon, right? The question about Pentecost, right? The timing. So basically, he was in Wentworth in December. They were making their plans to get him out the 21st, which is the equinox. No, not the equinox, the solstice, winter solstice. And then he was rescued. They were in France by Christmas. So I remember just those dates really stood out to me. And that's in 1743. So they were in France in 1744, where she gets pregnant, loses the baby.
She was pregnant before they got to France, right?
Yes, but that's where she had...
The monastery was in France.
Yes.
Okay.
So then she's pregnant before they leave. And once they get to France, she loses the baby in France. And then they go back to Scotland, where they have fall, winter, spring because of the harvest. Mm-hmm. So that's all of 44. Now it's in 45. We just read chapter 36, Preston Pans, where they had the battle, which I think was September, and that's 45. So they're really in 40. So it has been 2 years. I mean, that's holy crap. So yeah, I just gave you the entire outline of the last 2 years.
Right. And rightfully so, Colum, I think, never expected to see her again.
Oh, neither of them did. Yeah. I don't think. And every time I read that, I'm surprised. Wait, it's been 2 years? Holy heck, but it really has. So we're reminded of the conditions two of their last meeting, or just after Lyra had arranged for her to conveniently visit Gaelis Duncan.
Everyone
in the village of Cranesmere.
Everyone hates her. Leg hair.
I have like a visceral reaction whenever I read her name.
Oh, yeah.
You know what, though? It helps that there's so many consonants in that name.
It does. I mean, but I get acid reflux already, but it makes it worse when I read her name.
That's, you know, Larry the first time
McKenzie
I saw that word.
Causing acid reflux in 1743.
It's so true.
It's true, but every time I see it, like...
Or 1991.
I know. I know there's the whole, like, controversy of how it's pronounced because of years that nobody knew how it was pronounced. There was people calling a leg hair and stuff like that.
I wish her name was leg hair.
I know, but every time I look at it, all I see is Lowry. That's what I think of her name.
So it takes Summer 5 minutes to get to the end.
It does.
Of the name.
Yes, of the just word, that yeah. one name. Lowry.
And Davina says Leary, or Lyra. Sorry, Lyra. Lyra. Yeah, Lyra. Which is actually pretty. When you hear it, when you see it, you're like, what?
How? That's what I think.
Lyra.
How?
I think Lyra is pretty. It sounds like lyre, or, you know, like
I love
the
you,
instrument.
But I feel that way about your cat's names. I never would guess how they were pronounced by looking
you.
At their spelling.
That is true. Well, because Scottish Gaelic.
I've seen how they're spelled. She spells them like that to me, but I always spell them phonetically when I talk about
That's
them
That's why they also have nicknames. It's just much easier. So before they get down to business, the prince and the guard are dismissed. And
clearly.
He's not really, he's like, I gotta go because this woman can possibly get me some troops, but effer. This is not nice. This is not how you treat a prince. So Colum says to Claire that he owes her an apology. And I wrote, ha! For almost having her burned at the stake, perhaps? I don't know.
So that's really light. I mean, an apology, that's it. I feel
that's
like there
why
should be something physical involved
that's
there.
That's why she's a little bit aghast, like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So for almost having burned her at the stake? Yeah, maybe just that. And though he apologizes.
I think she's really conciliatory with him, considering everything that went down the last time they all hung out.
Well, they have words, but they both explain things a little more, so... It's not, does it make it better?
It doesn't. But again, she was never the intended target of that. It was just,
smother him with a couch pillow.
It's true. But she was never the intended target of the witch hunt. That was just an unfortunate thing that happened. And it was all.
No, you're right. She wasn't. So he apologizes for his levity. I owe you an apology. She's like, you think? So he admits and says, yes, she had absolutely been an accident. It was Gaelis who'd been the target. Even now, her name dredged up awful feelings within Claire.
And within me.
And within Abby. Acid reflux, anybody? So As an aside,
how are you doing, Abby? You having acid reflux right now?
Should we say it again? Lyra.
Or Leary. Lowry.
That's better.
Anything?
I watched this video of babies vomiting.
Oh, why?
Exactly.
Oh, gosh.
But I'm about to do that on your desk.
As an aside, this is going to be really interesting, this whole Claire and Leary thing.
Lowry?
Because seeing as how they decided to deal with quote-unquote things in season one, namely, they did not keep this part of the book intact, and that could possibly change the way things have to be handled in the future.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yep. Now, we don't have tons of time to, like, sit here and talk about stuff, right? And we can't talk about future stuff, like, spoiler-wise, because it happens, I think, in we find out more in Voyager, I think, right? Yes.
My
Voyager. This is elongated vowel episode. So yeah, so there are stuff, and okay, although we can talk about the future stuff that may or may not be affected.
Can't we?
We can't, because we don't give spoilers of future books. However, we can say the thing that was changed, and that was in the book Outlander, which we've already done the read along for, so hopefully you've read it if you're listening to this. Lyra, that part's not changed. Lyra was the one who sent her to Cranesmere. But after the fact, Jamie didn't find out that it was her that sent her to Cranesmere, right?
In the books.
Exactly. In the book, Jamie, who was it? Is it Ned?
Ned was there.
Yes, but Jamie's out on a hunt.
With Sandringham.
Yes, and someone goes to get Jamie.
It wasn't Ned.
That's right. Ned goes out like he does in the show. He goes straight from the castle. But someone goes, I don't know who, was it Murta? Must have been Murta. But anyway, someone goes to get Jamie, and Jamie leaves right away to go try and save Claire. To Cranesmere, that he finds out somehow, but he does not find out
that it's Lyra.
From Lyra, let alone that it's Lyra.
All right, books or series or
book? No, I'm talking about book.
Okay.
Only book. Now, this is what I'm saying is how they treated it differently in the series was that the way she got there was pretty much the same. But after the fact, well, the whole Sandringham hunt thing, that was different, but that doesn't matter. The fact that he was gone was the whole purpose, right? He was away from the castle. But after the fact, he somehow found out, either she told him or he confronted her, somehow he knew before he came to rescue Claire, he knew it was Lyra that had gotten her.
Well,
there.
If he knew that in the series, that's going to significantly alter.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Books.
It won't alter future books. It doesn't have to alter what happens, but it has to alter potentially.
I know we can't say spoilers
reasons.
Now. However, if he knew all of that, the things that he didn't know in the books, he would never have done what he did in progressive books.
No, that's not the case. He may not have done it under the same circumstances. Or, and this is what I'm saying, is you could have the same things happen, but his reason or a reason for doing it, they will have to change. They will have to, or his accepting of it will have to change.
Yeah, I just can't
think.
Have to, I just, honestly, I cannot think of a reason why someone would be okay and find a way to make that okay, knowing that this person had something to do with almost killing your spouse.
Oh, I agree 100%. That's
not something you get past.
I agree with you 100%. It is something that once they made that decision to not keep it like the book, not my monkey, not my circus, they/Diana will have to get them out of that in the future, because the way it was lined up worked perfectly. It wasn't broke, don't fix it. But they didn't. They're gonna have to fix it now for real. So that's interesting for future stuff. Season 3. If we get a season 3. So Claire is really, 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 really happy she has Jamie. Like, really happy. And it's like the one thing she can, like, kind of not gloat to Colm. But thinking about the whole thing and the ire and the anger and all that stuff that hearing the name Lyra still brings up in her, she knows that, look, he's mine. I got him in the end.
I can't think of anyone I've ever met on this earth ever who wouldn't be really, 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 really happy to have Jamie. Like, for real?
Touché, girl.
Put that out there.
That's good. I like it. So is this episode going to be called really? Well, we can't do pitch,
not.
But really, 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 really. So Colm offers her vengeance. He's like, look, Would you like me to help you get revenge on this chico? Chicky. Lyra is now married, and he is to one of Colm's taxmen, and Colm says that her husband would mete out any punishment that he asked him to do. Claire actually has to think about this. She doesn't have like an automatic answer. She's like, oh, but she needed some privacy in doing so. Apparently the walls, Diana describes the walls of that, of the castle or of the palace as 5 feet thick. So when she went to the window, the space between your outside and the inside is 5 feet. So she could like lean in into the window area and like literally almost have a little room to herself.
Lean. Could crawl up in
and
there
sleep.
And make a nap.
Exactly.
Read a book. Make a nook.
Exactly. Oh.
Okay, Dr.
I like
Seuss.
That.
Make a hook.
Nope.
Let's keep going. Make things that rhyme with hook.
She already did. We're past it. So she could find privacy.
You earned that.
So basically, she could easily find privacy in a window.
Nobody nopes me on the podcast. I nope her.
Well.
That's funny. I'm sorry.
There needs to be balance in this world.
No!
Claire has a little bit of privacy there in her window nook. And she relives a little bit of Cranesmere. The thieves' hole, the trial, the flogging, and that totally brings it back. You're like, this woman went through so much stuff. But even with her anger, she couldn't see Lyra as intrinsically evil. She saw her as this 16-year-old whatever, but
I
not as intrinsically evil.
As intrinsically evil, personally.
A lot of people do. A lot of people do.
I see nothing redemptive about her.
As they talk, she sees Jamie and the men drilling in the courtyard below. She concedes one thing to Lyra. Perhaps her feelings were more like her own and not less. Meaning, maybe she didn't give, does not excuse at all what she did, but maybe she truly did not give Lyra enough credit for actually having true, true feelings for Jamie.
Maybe she didn't give Lyra enough credit for masterminding almost getting her murdered.
Because oh, no, she gives her all that credit.
Because that was the thing of beauty. Like, for her to think ahead and know that Colm was planning on burning Gellis Duncan at the stake and was like, I think that I can get a twofer out of this if I just, you know, nudge her along and send her over.
And they're friends,
It was kind of a smart move, even though I hate her.
You know, I have never been that into a dude that I'd be willing to throw marbles on the staircase for him or get her burned at the witch.
Wait, burned at the witch? You clearly have never met your soulmate.
So, like, I'm on these online dating sites, and if I meet a guy and he's my soulmate, but he's talking to another girl,
then
I could throw
your
soulmate.
Oh.
And yeah, get her burned at the stake. It's
perfect.
Him
no,
burned.
No, no. But she has to marry him. She has to take him away from you.
Wouldn't you call that kind of person these days psychotic?
Which one? The one who stole him from you on the website or the
or
person
you?
Who tried to get you burned at the stake for marrying someone else?
I'm very confused now.
Me too. Let's go again.
I think Lyra's name should be pronounced slut.
That's the Gaelic pronunciation.
We need that as an out.
We don't talk about it much. We'll ask Agam.
We need to get Agam on the line. Claire tells Colm that she will take an apology, which he was offering earlier, but not vengeance. He thinks that she believes, if not in vengeance, then in mercy. And she replies, it's more justice than mercy. They get down to business. Is Colm actually planning on joining the prince? He is noncommittal. I've come to see him. Was all he said. Now she thinks through a few things. Maybe she should leave this discussion to Jamie. Just because Colm felt regret for nearly killing her didn't mean that he trusted her. Though she was there with Jamie and the prince, it didn't necessarily mean she wasn't an English spy. So what Diana is getting across here is that even though she's still with Jamie, she's still alive, and she's there supporting her husband who is supporting the prince, doesn't mean that Dougal knows her any more and should trust her any more than he did when they first met. And he was totally suspicious of who she may be.
I know, but 2 years after the fact,
I agree.
Considering she's stayed with Jamie and they're both still alive, I mean, you reach
it
a point
where
it
could
be a long
game, Summer.
A super long con.
Sorry, yes, a long game con.
It's just called a long con.
Is it a thing?
Yeah, the long con.
Colm drinks a lot each day. just to handle his pain.
Still.
It's not but he's drinking thing. More. It becomes clear to her. Colum had come to see the prince to make the decision whether or not to commit his men to the cause, and then Dougal would be in charge. Then he would say, hasta la pasta. He was going to take his own life.
He would not say that.
Probably not, but he would have said that in Gaelic. Now, he was not worried about suicide being a sin. He told Claire that he'd stopped believing in God when he was 19. Now, I did not go back and check Outlander, but I think that's about the time when he was taking over the clan. He was Laird, and that was about the time when he saw the worst or the most manifestation of his illness, of his syndrome, that he fell off his horse and he broke his legs and he just like never really fully healed. So I think that was about the time because something happened at 19 or else for him to have that. I remember the hour. It was 19. I was 19 and it was a Tuesday. I mean, it's quite specific. So he doesn't want an easy death. Claire is like, look, if you want to die, you can get some laudanum. You don't need me. You know, I mean, you could have got that anywhere. And he says he wants to be of sound mind when he goes and not wasted, basically not off his head. He wants to know what Galus had used to off her husband. They discussed it a little bit.
She's like, you don't want that. It looked incredibly painful.
And took a little bit of time. Quick compared to like an illness.
It would have been much faster had she just dosed him real good. But it was like,
oh, yeah.
It was like a little bit every day.
Well, that's why he wasn't dying. At the end, when he died on the floor there, she totally dosed him. She needed to do that, like, early days. Claire gives him a small vial of cyanide that she kept in her box to kill rats. Now, Colum says he still doesn't know what she is, but a witch was never anything he'd considered. Perhaps she'd tell him what she actually was. She says he wouldn't believe her. She says, better call me a witch. It's as close as you're likely to get. So the next morning, she meets Lord Balmerino. She was on her way to the courtyard to see Jamie and Dougal give a demonstration for Don Francisco de la Quintana. In this chapter, he's called the Spaniard. He's of the Spanish court. And the reason he's important is because the prince needs to play nice so that he can hopefully get some Spanish gold.
Is that an official term?
Yes.
It's better than nice, but not quite as good as nice, super nice, nice, nice.
Exactly. The triple.
Nothing is nicer than a three-way. What's wrong with you?
It's nice, then nice, then super nice, then ménage à trois.
Okay.
How does that work? Because how do you get something between a ménage à trois and a nice?
Super nice?
It's super nice.
Or is that like a 2.5 nices?
Sure.
2.5, like a...
I don't know. It's like nice with a...
you have
to cut that out.
I don't know, but it was kind of funny.
We're explicit now.
Balmerino says, quote, I do like a pretty man with a sword.
Who doesn't?
But that makes me think, wait, that's not, that sounds so out of place. I mean, in this conversation about whatever they're talking about, I wrote LOL.
He was clearly down with the nice, super nice conversation we just had between that and a ménage à trois.
So he likes the dudes.
He likes a man with a nice sword, don't we all?
Yeah.
Exactly.
But like an actual sword or a sword?
Let it go.
Let it go, let it go.
Let that go.
Super nice.
That was so weird.
That was very, like, superstar.
That was so Mary Catherine Gallagher.
Oh, Lord.
Your armpits are delightful.
They were too careful to have Fergus try to pickpocket anything within Holyrood, so their intelligence was dependent on what Jamie could get directly from the prince. And this was actually quite a lot, since the prince liked Jamie and relied on him. Now, Charles hoped for support from Spain. That's why this Spanish dude, the Spaniard, was so important. Balmerino had wanted to give her some broadsheets that he thought she might find amusing. Like, ha ha, did you see these? One was of the prince, another of himself, and one even of Jamie. But then there's one of her. And she's called the Stuart Witch. Now, even with... And it doesn't look anything like her, but obviously it's not flattering. But even with Balmerino's assurances that once Charles has attained his crown, all of this will be nothing, now she realizes she's also wanted. And yeah, there's one thing of being linked to Big Jamie, Big Red, whatever. Red Jamie.
And I'm like, none of those things were actually his names.
Red Jamie.
Or nicknames.
Red
that's
Jamie.
The only one that's
I know. That came out in the end. So even though...
But now I want gum.
Even though there's risk being related to an outlaw, she now is wanted for her own witchiness. Exactly. Yeah. Jinx, you owe me a Diet Coke.
I will never.
You will always. There are, of course, consequences for her too if captured. And she says, plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose. Which means the more things change, the more things stay the same.
Cue 80s rock ballad.
Totally. And you know what that's referring to, right? The fact that they've already been down this. I mean, she didn't have one before, but they've already been down this road with the whole broadsheet things. Like, seriously, seriously, good Lord, seriously. So Jamie and Dougal are showing off and they're dueling using the customary dueler's response, which doubled as Jamie's clan motto, je suis prêt. I am ready. Now, how timely for what they're about to embark upon in this book. During their fight, Don Francisco was smiling, watching them. Colm was nowhere to be seen. Now, both of these fighters, as we know, are left-handed, and they're using Highland broadswords rather than the typical French rapier-like sword. So not only are they both large and Scottish and left-handed, they're not using the normal swords that are used in this kind of dueling. So they stand out on every level. When Diane describes how uncle and nephew had fought many times before, back to back and shoulder to shoulder, it made me think back to back and belly to belly. I don't give a damn if someone is smelly. What is that?
No, I don't give a damn because I'm stone dead already. It's the zombie jamboree.
Oh, wow. I totally got that wrong. I always thought it was smelly
so bad.
Something.
You're bad okay, at this.
So then I was bad at that one. So then that one I knew I had wrong because I put dot, dot, dot. But when I hear back to back, I automatically think of one bright day in the middle of the night, two dead boys got up to fight. Back to back, they faced each other, drew their swords and shot each other. A deaf policeman heard the noise and ran to save the two dead boys. If you don't believe my tale is true, ask the blind man. He saw it too. So that's a big fat no from you guys.
You didn't think about that either? I didn't think about that okay. until you started reciting literally the whole thing.
It's kind of short.
Right now.
As opposed to last Tuesday.
Yes. But before that, no, that did not come to mind. But thank you for reciting that poem and making me remember things from my childhood that I...
You're welcome.
Maybe may have been better forgotten, but go ahead.
We learned there is a Lord Kilmarnock who, with his young son Johnny, was also staying in Holyrood. Now, Johnny would lord over the other boys, the fact that he was his father's heir, and was going at age 12 to war with him.
Johnny gets what he deserves.
Uh-huh. Johnny had made a remark about bonnet lairds, of course meaning Jamie, and Fergus had taken offense. Now, Jamie tells him not to play out of his league. Basically, don't mess around. You know, don't pick battles that are bigger than you, right? The things that you can't handle. Now, Johnny is 2 years older and 2 stone heavier. And
I thought you were about to say he was 2 stoned. And I was like, no, really? No. I didn't know that. I didn't read that part.
And Diana writes in French without translating, ne pétez plus haut que votre cul, which we learn later what that means. So Kilmarnock was agitated, and I think rightly so, that though O'Sullivan and O'Brien, two others who were working with the prince, and other Irish were going to meet with a Spaniard. In the end, however, if something bad happened and they lost this cause, those Irishmen would be able to plead immunity from prosecution due to their nationality. But then the Scots had no such recourse. He was also testy, Kilmarnock, because he had said good morning to the prince the day before, and the prince had acted haughty as if he'd breached some kind of etiquette by addressing him. The prince basically has his priorities backwards. He needs the Scots, and he's doing things like asking a woman to speak with the guy.
He's trying to lead the Scots. He doesn't just need them.
Yes, but he needs them to fight for him, because he can have all the money in the world if they're not going to fight for him. I mean, he can get mercenaries.
If they won't fight for him, they won't support him as a leader anyway.
I understand that. But basically, he's pissing on the people he needs to not butter up, but at least treat with some kind of dignity. And so by him, and Kilmarnock was not any kind of like low person, like a farmer. He was a lord. So why, you know what I'm saying? It's just seeing how he treats the Spaniard, which I can understand, he needs to court him for the money. I get it. At the same time, he has his priorities, maybe not backwards. I think he knows very well what he needs, but he's not smart about, I think, how he could be smarter.
Is that historically accurate? Did Charles actually favor the Irish over the Scottish? Do you know?
Well, Diana wrote it. I'm sure she did her, I'm sure she did her due diligence, her research. But it's not just the fact that it's Irish versus Scottish. It's the Scottish versus almost everybody else. So the Scottish, or sorry, the Irish is just one example, whether it's Irish or Italian or, she doesn't mention French, but it could be French as well.
Could it be because the Highlanders at that time, by a lot of other European countries, were considered...
backwards.
Yeah, like hill folk.
Oh, surely. I'm sure there was all kinds of prejudices. Absolutely.
So he was just looking at them as being his workhorses and kind of his, like, war slaves.
They were his subjects. They were his subjects. The Irish would never have been his subjects. If he loses, right, and Scotland remains under England or under the crown of the King of England, then definitely the Irish would never be his subjects. So Dougal and Jamie are still dueling, and out of the corner of her eye, Claire sees Fergus with a large stick in his hand. Kilmarnock does not seem to be troubled. He's pretty sure his son can defend himself. The fight stops at Dougal's call. And Fergus asks Jamie to, oh, monsieur, please do le parabola. It's a trick where he throws a sword up in the air and it comes and lands sword down or pointy side down in the dirt in front of him.
Pointy side, is that the official, like?
It's not the basket. Term. It's the other end. I'm not sure. The tip of the blade. Yeah, the end of the blade down into the ground. He does the trick and thus distracts the entire crowd. And Fergus is, talk about like Lyra having, you know, we may not like her, but she's
We're not comparing Fergus to Lyra, ever.
It's not comparing, but you were saying how Lyra, as much as you just, as you dislike her, had some brains about her. She thought enough to plan this thing for Claire. And Fergus is smart. If you're going to survive on the streets like that, you got to be smart. And he knows exactly what to do. He uses this to distract the crowd. Meanwhile, he attacks not-so-wee Johnny and then hides. But as... she, even though she can't see him, as he's walking away, Claire hears his young voice say, "Ne pétez plus haut que votre cul. Don't fart above your asshole."
I love that. I thought that was so funny.
Oh, I love it.
Is that like a real like saying that's
I'm
like
sure.
used? I mean, it has to be, or else Diana wouldn't have used it, I'm sure.
I think it'd be awesome. We need to look that up.
It's very explicit and specific, and it makes complete and utter sense.
So now it's November. We went from October to November. Claire takes advantage of good weather to go hunting for lichen in the rock garden behind the palace.
I just think that's funny to say hunting for lichen. I mean, it's not like it's moving.
That's true.
It's not like a moving target it's that she has to like
to
stalk and like
trap.
Exactly. But she does have to crawl around for it.
Perhaps.
Claire finds herself treated with much respect here in Edinburgh. People seemed not to fear her. Even her Englishness is forgiven once people find out who her husband was. Now, something he'd done at Preston Pans was pretty great, Jamie, because he had impressed the Scots, and people call him Red Jamie. So there was something, and she wasn't sure she knew all of the details, but that thus far she got what she was going to get. Jamie summons her, and they go for a walk with her basket to see Colum. It was to be in secret, away from the palace. Her basket gave her the excuse for venturing out to get herbs, collect things, etc. They walked up to the kirkyard of Canongate to meet Colum. Claire wondering, as she was out of breath, how in the heck Colum had made that trek. And my guess is Angus Moore.
I know, but every time they talk about Angus Moore, I think to myself,
Our Angus
in the series is so diminutive comparatively that he can't possibly have done the same feat. Not the same feat of strength.
So they find Colum. And Claire says he looks like a little gnome, quote, natural inhabitant of this man-made rock garden, unquote. She still sees lichen. This is like a different area now, but she still sees it. Now, Colum hears them approach. So even though he's aging and getting sicker because of his illness, his senses are still good. Colum's called them there to ask Jamie a question. Do you hold me as your kinsman? Now, Jamie answers, you have my mother's eyes. Shall I deny that? They talk about his mom for a bit. How much Jamie looks like her. Hair, mouth. Caught by the moment, Jamie mentions Willie and how he, too, had told Jamie his mouth was so wide it could catch bugs like a toad. Colum had written to Ellen, we find out, after Willie and the new babe had died of the pox, and as she was ill from the pox. We learned that he was about 2 years older than Ellen, and he and Ellen had been close, as Jamie and Jenny were close. Now, after his legs had started to go bad, Ellen would come to him morning and night, telling him of the castle and the goings-on. Letitia, his wife, was not interested in him much. They talked together sometimes with Dougal about the clan and how its fortunes could be maintained, alliances, etc. And then she left. Without asking permission, without giving announcement, without a goodbye. And Ellen, we find out, had never written back. Now, as they talk of his parents, Jamie asks what he thought of his father, Brian. And he answers, you have his eyes. The damned Fraser cat eyes. He didn't like him much, but he knew him, Jamie's father, for a man of honor. And he knew that Jamie, he said, had the same honor. Colm finally gets to the purpose of the conversation. To commit the Mackenzies of Leoch to the prince's cause or not. He says he knows what Dougal wants, but that Dougal will abide by what he decides. Jamie says that he's there with his men. Surely his choice is plain. Now he's trying to talk his way around the question without saying, do this uncle or do that uncle. He says, well, I'm here with my men. That's his answer. Colm asks him for the truth, for the sake of his father's honor. And I thought, oh, that's a low blow. He asks for Hamish, his cousin, his blood. He looks to Claire silently, Jamie does, telling her that she has a say in this and asking, what shall I do? Claire saw young Hamish in her mind. If the Mackenzies fell with Charles at Culloden, his future was in danger. The men of Lallybroch had Jamie to save them from final slaughter, if it came to that, but Leoch men would not. But she could not make the choice. Jamie tells his uncle, go home to Leoch, uncle, and keep your men there. He says he'll tell the prince in the morning of his decision, and they have a final farewell. On the way back to the palace, Claire tells Jamie he did right. At least now the Mackenzies will be safe. They pass by the World's End, which is a tavern that still exists in Edinburgh today. So as they later go to the Great Gallery, which is a big gallery in the palace, they see Kilmarnock and ask about his son. He says, oh, his pride is hurt a little, but he'll be okay. He's actually okay with the way things turned out because he says one of the things he's not been able to teach his son and heir is humility. So he says Fergus actually may have done a good deed. So I just understood when Claire says that dancing required most of my breath, that they were dancing this whole time. I didn't realize that just because they went into a gallery that it was a dance room. until Diana writes that it took most of her breath, I was like, oh, wait, you're dancing? I didn't know. So the prince was popular, of course, and so was Jamie. Jamie danced with lots of women. And Balmerino was dancing as well. Colm, however, was not there, and it looked like he hadn't gotten a chance to speak with the prince, since the latter was in such good spirits at the moment. He probably didn't have any bad news given to him recently. Diana introduces us to the master of the Swordmakers Guild of Glasgow, John Simpson, and his son, also John Simpson. Her description of the son being deaf as a stone is hilarious. Now, he could follow rhythmic vibration. So he seemed to be getting some rhythm right in this dance, but he winced at the screech of the violins. So it would seem that he actually could hear a little bit. So as they danced around and Claire was getting closer to the prince and Don Francisco, the Spaniard, he motioned her away. It's like, you know, don't come near me. I don't want you to ruin this. Kilmarnock says, quote, he's afraid to have you introduced to the Spaniard. Kilmarnock thinks it may be because of the broadsheet that Balmerino was showing everyone. The Spanish, she says, are superstitious enough that the prince doesn't want to take any chances. Claire brings Kilmarnock's attention to the pictures in the gallery, portraits of the prince's family, more than 100 of them, and they look strikingly similar. It seems that one artist named Jacob DeWitt was commissioned by Charles II to make portraits of all the king's ancestors from Robert the Bruce onward. This was to assure everyone of the ancientness of his lineage. Now, DeWitt had no idea what they looked like, and so he used any Tom, Dick, or Mary, because yes, there were women, he could get into his studio as models. And if you looked at, like, so many of their faces apparently looked really similar.
That makes me think of, like, the Habsburg chin.
Oh, gosh. Like, every third
all
one.
All the inbreeding with the Habsburgs of Austria, they all had a very specific, like, chin that was, what was it? It was, like, curved down. It was weird.
It was kind of out.
It was a weird chin.
It was a jaw issue.
We can link to that. It was weird.
It was getting late and Don Francisco was getting tired. Seeing that he could use some help, Claire recommends Jamie give Charles a hand, But before Jamie could make it over there, the Simpsons sword makers, the father and son, had the Spaniard by their wrists and ankles and were carrying him out the door like so much luggage or something. That was the end of the ball. As soon as the prince left, as they made their way to their residence, they came across Angus Vore, who said, "My master is dead." Charles' reaction...
I think he said it a little bit more dejected and sad.
I'm not going to act it out.
I think you didn't give it nearly enough credence.
Sorry.
And,
Angus,
and
Angus, I apologize. Charles' reaction, according to Jamie, was, quote, "Perhaps it was as well," unquote, because of Dougal.
Well, I mean, even if he didn't know that he was not going to pledge his people, what good was literally that one man going to be in his war? He wasn't going to ride a horse to battle. I mean, he was looking at the Scots to be his war horses. And if this man was not going to be a credit to him on the battlefield, what good was he to him?
Because of Dougal, he says, Dougal was more than willing to join Charles. So now the Mackenzies of Leah will march with the army. Thinking that there may be some word of his decision before he died, Jamie had taken Colum's red diary from his rooms. But the last entry he read was, quote, "Met with young Jamie and his wife. Have made my peace with Ellen at last." So what did this mean to them? It meant that they have less choice than ever. They definitely need to try to assure Charles' victory. Claire asks, why couldn't Colum have waited a little longer? Just till morning after he spoke with Charles. And Jamie smiles and says, he likely didn't have a choice at the hour of his death, Sassenach. And she's like, no, 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 you don't understand. She's like, now that he's dead, I'm just going to tell you because there's no point in keeping anything. So she tells Jamie that he actually did mean to kill himself. That was hard for Jamie to believe. And then Jamie asks Claire, is it a sign that Charles is destined to win the fight?
No.
And so ends the chapter. You're right.
I don't think that it was. Or was it just more indicative that there was literally nothing that they could do to change it? Or maybe they'd always done the same thing repetitively in history, because I think she's always gone back. I keep saying that because I believe it. I want everyone to know that when that comes true and comes to pass, that I said it first. And that was chapter 37, Holyrood.
You should call it Kevorkian.
Join us back for our next episode where we discuss the read-along of chapter 38 entitled A Bargain with the Devil.
Thank you as always so much for listening.
And thank you, Abby, for joining us.
And thank you to our guest, Abby.
Thank you for having me.
We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous audio host, Audioboom.com. Our Audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/OutlanderPod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at OutlanderPod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/OutlanderPod or email us at OutlanderPod@gmail.com.